some extent. One last question that I would like to ask to Tim and James, because when you were talking about your new market model, I had the feeling that finally this is all a political issue and it's about making governments operate a systematic shift in R&D policy. What I would like to know is, beyond idealism, what do we need to do to make governments operate such a shift?
So, is it just politics? I do think there is an aspect of, you know, I think scientists are also monopolists. And so you have to force them out into the open as well. It's not, and so this is, I suppose, why there's some emphasis on evaluation, because I think the scientists have been getting a free ride as well, not developing, you know, taking the money and funding and not producing things. And that's where we get the Soviet sort of criticism in this. In terms of changing the system, well, we have a maybe James wants to. Strategy. We're going to talk about strategy this afternoon.
Well, the transition strategy is quite important, and we think we have a fairly feasible transition strategy. And it's a very here and now strategy. There's a commission on intellectual property, innovation and public health that was appointed by the World Health Organization just this year, just a few months ago. And they do work through this year and through next year, and they produce a report. We have asked that the initial strategy was to try and get out of this body or some other initiative at the World Health Organization a best practices model for research and development for country as a soft target. That to us is not easy for us to do, as you might think, because the U.S. government and the pharma sector have now taken the bait, and they see this as a big thing. They're mobilizing, the White House are mobilizing against an R&D treaty. So we're now in favor of more R&D. We're pushing the idea of we're not spending enough on the development of new medicines. It costs money. Don't have free riders. We have this sort of rhetoric now, and they're in the uncomfortable position of opposing the anti-free rider treaty. So we're against free riders. They're for free riding. That's the new role model we have. Now, if we can succeed, and it's not easy because we have to persuade free riders to actually talk about the free riding issue, because most of the world are free riders in the research area. The worst country is the biggest public goods provider, which is the United States, and ironically, they're the most opposed to an anti-free rider treaty. Now, it makes the politics sort of odd, but suppose we succeed, as we think we will, because we think we are beginning to mobilize thoughtful people to realize the alternative is the USTR destroying price control mechanisms, forcing all kinds of extreme IPR measures. That's essentially the competing paradigm now. We're trying to say there are two ideas about how you do the trade-related part of research and development. So as we begin to sort of make people realize they have to choose camps, we think our camp is going to grow quite fast, and it actually things are going good for us. Now, if the WHO gets a soft benchmark, no treaty or anything like that, that's actually very important for us, because in a parallel negotiation involving the WTO, which is the hard enforcement treaty with the real teeth in it, there is a protocols on investment and protocols on negotiations on services, on investment, on things like that, that the Europeans and the Americans and services that they want very much. And so if those mature in the WTO, it's a consensus-based organization. It creates an opportunity for one of the southern countries to say, we will not accept an agreement upon investment or services or something unless every country that meets the best practices norm of the soft treaty is exempt from the requirements of the TRIPS agreement. And it actually becomes, because this will happen a couple years from now, it actually becomes a credible proposal, because the New York Times, other people will be sympathetic to it, because the best practices model, in fact, deals with free riding. It actually is an intelligent way to do it, and we'll have respectable academic support then. So there, that then creates a debate in the North. Do you even need to have a TRIPS if you have, for medicine, if you have a competing model, which is the anti-free riding R&D treaty? Well, at that point, we think we're really in business. Now, the other thing is, to the degree that, that countries began to experiment, the other thing is the U.S. is going to have a debate in the next year on the prize model. Because the same people that introduced parallel trade legislation in America that went from very few supporters to now 60 senators in the U.S. Senate are now going to introduce their next initiative to replace the monopoly with a $57 billion a year innovation prize for new products. It won't pass right away, but it will stimulate a debate on what's feasible and possible. So we're facing Stockholm syndrome on the patent system. Everyone can't imagine, you know, any other way to finance R&D. There's only one, it's the patent system. And so it's very interesting that the debate in the WHO at this very moment, which is why the US government's intervened, why pharma's intervened, they want to stifle even a discussion of an R&D treaty because it's a threatening idea. And I think that's also mobilizing people to become informed about it.
Okay. Thanks, Tim, James, and Benny. Time has run out. And thanks to the audience.